the meeting of the CCSD Board of Directors meeting to order, please. And will you join me in the Pledge of Allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right. We establish a quorum. As you'll notice, Director Farmer isn't here this afternoon. He just has a humdinger of a cold. No concerns. It is a cold. But he thought it would be more appropriate for him probably not to be in the public venue this afternoon and have an opportunity to share that with us. So I talked to him this afternoon and wished him a very speedy recovery. He said he was going to sit in the sun and get a little bit of vitamin D. So, Mr. Carmel, is there a report from closed session?
Yes, Madam Vice President. The board discussed two pending litigation cases, instructed its labor negotiator on the IAFF MOU, and considered the general manager's performance evaluation as well.
Thank you. Moving on then to the agenda review, are there any additions, deletions, comments as far as the agenda itself? Okay, excellent. I apologize. I didn't see that.
I just was curious. There was an amended agenda that was sent out today. I couldn't tell what was different. Can we get it? Can we? 5C was the change. Okay, thank you very much.
Moving on to the agenda item 2, commission report, the PROS chairman report from Steve Niffen. Mr. Niffen, I do have a couple of comment cards here. Do you want to hear those initially, or would you prefer to address them after you've made your presentation?
Oh, that's awesome if you're going to let them speak now, because that'll get them along their way.
Perfect. Okay.
Yeah, let's take them first.
Excellent. Okay. The first I have is Dr. Robert Kelly. Dr. Kelly?
I've given each of you the outline of what I'm going to talk about, and it has a couple of pictures in it.
Sir, could you, I did address you, but could you identify yourself
and
your residence?
I'm Dr. Robert Kelly. I've lived in Cambria for 20 years. I'm one of your old PROS commissioners.
Okay, thank you, sir.
And I've worked on community projects since 2001 with Joan Coben. Today I wanted to talk to you and give you kind of some suggestions on the skateboard park. I am not an expert on the subject, but I'm representing a young man today. His name is Jake Martin. He graduated from Leffingwell High School, and his senior project was to evaluate our skate park, look at other skate parks, and then make a recommendation to the school as well as to the Public Works Department. And he finished that project in 2018. Carlos has the binder. If anything that I'm talking about, you might want to go down there and look at the binder and see the pictures of some of the subjects I might mention. And also he designed a future park for us. What my grandson and two of his friends, what we did is we traveled from Santa Cruz and Felton all the way to Ventura and looked at every single skateboard park that a city or a district was running, and asked a lot of questions of the family members and the skaters, what they like, what they don't like, and things like that. And so with that, he wrote up his a good part of his report. Also, then we went ahead and surveyed the middle school and the high school here to see what the skaters would like to see in their park. 15 years ago, when Joan Coben, Doug Buckmaster, myself, and Barbara Carpenter did the community park plan, we spent 9 months on it, editing it, and then we spent another 6 months doing the environmental impact report. 15 years ago is the park that would have worked at that time. It's a different world today, completely, and the kids have different interests. And so I will be making some recommendations about that plan. What I'm first recommending is that we move the current skateboard park to the physically community park. That's where it belongs with the other children's activities that are going to be there. And to be able to do that, I'm a professional in your field, so I'm able to...
I apologize, but your time has run out. I'll give you another few seconds, please, to try to wrap up your presentation.
Oh, wow.
It's a three-minute timeline.
Oh, I didn't know I had a time frame. I apologize.
Not a problem.
Well, I'll just skip down to... The way we built the library is we put a thermometer outside, and we all worked hard in this community to raise money to build a library. Obviously, it was successful. I'm one of the seven members of the pickleball group that started the pickleball, and we were successful with that. This particular skateboard park can be built under the design today, and I've given you pictures of it so you can see what it looks like. We can raise the money and build it, and it could be located in the Physical Eating Ranch. I would recommend that we don't start another group here just for the skateboard, that the CYAA take on the project as one of their sports and have a subcommittee that has to do with the skateboard park. Okay. Anyhow, you can read the rest of my report and look at the pictures. You'll get some idea. The skateboard park today, our particular park, and I'm the one that wrote you letters and a manager asking that it be torn down because it was an accident waiting to happen.
Thank you, sir.
We do not need another lawsuit. And so thank you, Carlos, and all of you for getting that done. I sleep much better now. The new...
Sir, I've already given you a minute more.
Okay. The new skate park designed today, it will be used in the Olympics. It's used in our national...
sir, I'm sorry, but we have other speakers, okay, and I need to allow them the time. Yeah. I apologize. The next up I have is from Buddy Campo.
Hi. I'm Buddy Campo. I just heard about this recently, so I'm not super prepared, but I was pretty surprised that there was plans to get rid of the skate park. From what I've heard, some Nerf soccer field is going to be going there. I'm not sure on that either, but in my opinion, we have plenty of places to play soccer, and that would most likely be an adult thing. We have plenty of things for adults in this community, and there's not a whole lot of things for kids to do here, so it just kind of blows my mind that it's always seemed like that was pretty neglected, too. So I just think we should do something for the kids. We move old buildings from one side of town to the other and spend a bunch of money on that. You know, we got a brand new library, pickleball courts, like the trails are all manicured, and you know, we spend money everywhere. Why can't we have a nice skate park for the kids? We already lost the youth center. There's enough money in this town that we could build something really nice for them. So that's all I got.
Thank you. I have one more slip as of right now. Mr. Eric, is it Donnelly, sir?
Yes.
Thank you.
my name is Eric Donnelly, resident of Moore Bay. How you guys doing today?
Good.
Totally in favor of the skate park. I remember as a young kid, me and my fellow skateboarders and our parents had to fight to raise money in Los Osos, and they gave us just a lot. And we had to provide our own ramps. We built everything. We put it there. We maintained it. We cleaned up after ourselves. And that's pretty much with anything. If you got a basketball court, you invite people there. You build it. They come. You expect them to, you know, manage it and look after it. And I believe that that's the case here. It is a small park, but it is something that the kids need to do. Absolutely. It's the only one around, especially for kids that can't travel to the nearest Cayugas Park. I feel like it's a good thing to keep and to keep in mind that it's right next to the library, you know, and if you can tie anything together with it where kids can be at the library and be at the skate park, they can get education, they can have fun. And because I grew up skateboarding, so I know what it's all about. And it is about fun. And you get all your friends there, and it's like an everyday thing. Let's go meet up at the skate park, just like other kids go meet up at the soccer field or the basketball court. It's a part of what the children in this community want to do. And for the elders to remove that and take that away just kind of, you know, is almost a bad reflection on you guys, you know? Like, the kids are just as much as citizens and participants of this community as everybody else. So, you know, please don't take that away from them, you know, and try and put yourself in their shoes, what they would want to do. You know, if this is an issue about children and caring for what the kids want to do and having something fun to do, you should keep it, you know, for sure. And thank you guys for your support, and have a great day.
Awesome. Steve Niffen, Chair Pro, or Pros Chair. First of all, thank you for letting those people be heard. It's important to me that their voice is heard, because they feel like their voice wasn't being heard because they didn't know it was going on, which takes us, you know, to how a working class person can actually participate and how they're to know. And so I sympathize with their position. Jeffrey, did you want to say something? You want to come up and say your piece? You can come up. It's the utmost of importance to me that children are allowed to participate in the process so that they know that it's real and tangible. Go ahead and just say what you need to say.
Okay. I think that it'd be cool if we kept it, because there's already, like, over there at the Channel Park, there's a soccer field, and there's soccer fields at, like, every school. I think it'd be nice if we could keep it and just have something for kids to do in Cambria.
There you go. Awesome. So in moving this along, so we didn't hear a voice. Now we're hearing a voice. We haven't built the soccer pavilion. They're looking at it. So hopefully this conversation, and I'll say in their defense, these aren't the people that shut down the skate park. It would be more our group and Carlos, that guy. But it was all, you know, in good faith at some level. So the discussion is still open. We'll have more of the discussion as we look at what we're doing over there. I think one of the things out of that is the East Ranch. Again, we keep coming back to this. What are we actually going to do over there? Now that I'm listening to Bob, this old voice, not in so many ways, or a voice from the past, shall we say, that, you know, other things were over there. And, you know, his escape facility over there, the worst thing that could possibly be over there is, anyway. So thank you, gentlemen and ladies, for coming and making your voice. And you can sit through the coronavirus presentation. If you want to make a larger public comment, you can. The things that I wanted to talk about was the beautification grant, and I was going to Yelp and tell you that your assistant Haley, whatever, assistant district clerk, whatever it is fabulous. So fabulous, I've brought her flowers because she helped me fill the grant out. Yeah, right? She helped me fill the grant out. So I get this grant, never done a grant. I'm like, here it is. It's 20 grand. I'm not putting that much effort into it. I got a lot of stuff on my computer. I can't put it together. They say, hey, John says to me early, oh, yeah, we can help. I don't see him anywhere, but Haley I see. And Haley says, oh, yeah, we'll do it over the computer. It didn't work. She takes me down to the office. Have you been in her office?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, right? Awesome. It was like Alfred in the Batcave down there.
Yeah.
She puts them up on the screen and just hammers, literally moving page numbers around. And in about, it couldn't have been more than 15 minutes, literally had this little thing put together and shot off into the old printer and six copies stapled together and correlated. So we could not have done that without her, not to mention Kermit putting a lot of stuff and Joyce and Adolph too. And so we're throwing it in the hat for the county beautification grant. There's 90 grand. Maybe we'll get some to help design the bathroom over there and get that going. And so even if we don't get it this year, at least we are familiar with that process, and it'll be easier to apply next year for other little things, skate park if we had to at some point in the future. So grateful for that. And then other than that, just listening to the pool conversation, basically. Really haven't had any other vested interest in it other than the conversation. And so other than that, I'll take any questions. And they're just from the cookie crop.
Support local business.
It was awesome.
Thank you for recognizing Haley. We recognize.
Yeah, she does half as much for me as she does for you guys. You're stoked.
We know, and she also operates the Starship Enterprise.
Yeah, literally. That was, yeah. Any questions?
Do you have any idea of what the initial actions are going to be for PROS in terms of pursuing another look at skate park options?
Well, Carlos, we've got a little money invested in looking at the soccer thing. And, you know, in defense of the soccer people are going to raise their heads and say, hey, you know. And so there'll be a discussion. Hopefully we won't have it in this room. We'll have it in the PROS. And, you know, it'll... there'll be. I want something over there. I want there to be something that we're playing and doing, and so we'll pursue it and see what we can come up with.
Do you feel there's an opportunity to work to both?
Well, I don't know if there's room for both. You know, I heard somebody
not
say,
"Yeah, there necessarily,
oh, yeah,
but.
I think so." Yeah, I do. I think a skate park is a good thing to have when it's made out of concrete, because I don't think if you use it this year, somebody's going to use it next year. And if it doesn't deteriorate, I think it's a good thing for a community to have. So, yeah.
Okay. Director Rice?
I just wanted to thank the folks that made some noise on the social media, whether it's Nextdoor or Facebook or wherever, because I did see a lot of people not just reposting or sharing, but actually adding a new thing besides just commenting, and I very much appreciate. I hope that we can wrangle those folks to keep the visibility up, because once you start tearing it down, of course people are going to notice. We've been asking for months to try and find partners interested in helping us with it. Now I think we have some. Let's keep them involved. I mean, I hope they stay involved so that we can keep the visibility up.
Good. I'll work on it. Thank you.
Thank you. Moving on then to public safety. Chief Hollingsworth, a presentation for us. Thank you all for coming.
Good afternoon, William Hollingsworth, Fire Chief. And they're getting that up on the screen for us. Thank you for letting us do this today. And hopefully it doesn't look like that throughout the entire presentation. I want to acknowledge that Director Farmer is actually choosing the correct course of action by social distancing himself today, which is relevant to what we're talking about. The county fire chiefs have developed this program in regards to getting information out to people. It was primarily designed for our administration and elected officials, but in multiple discussions, we felt it was important to be able to deliver this to the community for the purpose of reassuring them and informing them to what we know and what we're planning. So let me preface this by reminding everybody that I am not a physician. Please do not confuse me as such, and I am not an expert in virology. However, in my role as a fire chief and the emergency services coordinator for this community, it's important to be able to get some of this stuff out to people. And it's important to realize that what we're looking at here today, this is not a study in epidemiology and the coronavirus, COVID-19, how it came to be and all that kind of stuff. This is a high-level review just to give you information. And what's important to realize is that it is coming, which this is not. So if they can get it fixed, we'll move forward. I'm going to leave this with you, and if it moves forward, we'll do this, but I'll go ahead and move on. It's important to get information out there. We could turn to any news channel and you're going to find information. Those numbers change daily, and it changes depending on which channel you're watching. Probably the most accurate numbers you're going to get are either from the WHO, World Health Organization, or CDC, Centers for Disease Control. And we're taking that information. We're meeting on when I say we, I'm talking about the county fire chiefs. We're meeting regularly with directors of the Emergency Services Agency in San Luis Obispo, conference calls with them and the county health official, which is Dr. Penny Borenstein. And we're getting information and keeping that up to date for all of us in regards to when we have certain trigger points and what we're going to do within our own communities. From an international standpoint, you can look at these situational reports on a daily basis. And even what is in your packet today is about a day old. So the current information, if we're looking at confirmed cases right now in China, it's well over 80,000. Globally, it is in excess of 118,000. There's about 4,600 cases being added every day that people that are being infected or exposed to this. Outside of China, it's growing a little bit larger and faster right now, and we're looking at about 32,000 cases. Worldwide, there's about 3,100 deaths so far in China, and outside of China, a little over 1,100. That's not fear-mongering. Those are just facts. That's just what's happening right now on an international all the way down to a regional level. In the United States, most current numbers show us at about 1,200, just over 1,200 people that are infected. A total of 36 deaths have occurred, and that's across 43 different jurisdictions now. That includes our areas of influence like Guam, Puerto Rico, District of Columbia, and such. There are 175 cases in California with 3 deaths and 0 cases in this county. There are still a number of counties in the state of California, the majority of counties actually, that do not have any registered cases yet. What all that means, though, is we have to put it in relation to what numbers really mean and what that affects. So the infection rate is possibly as high as 35% of the population, and that is not just today. That's over about a 12 to 24-month period. That means there are phases when this is going to hit. There's going to be an initial phase when it might go through, and then there's a reinfection phase, and then it'll kind of taper off after that. Of that 35%, the mortality rate might be as high as 2.5%. Thank you. And what we are noticing right now is if you compare that 2.5% to other stuff, the standard influenza that we see on a regular seasonal basis is below 0.01%. So although we're still talking about a really small number, it's still a significant increase because of the impact to the community. However, we are starting to notice that infection curve is changing. So when we're still noticing cases happening in Southeast Asia and China, that curve is actually starting to balance out. And what we're noticing now is that it's exponentially rising in other countries that were slow to respond. So where we're noticing the biggest right now is in Europe, which is why you've seen some of the responses you've seen of late. We are noticing a steady rise in the United States. It's not exponentially increasing at this point. Additionally, there we go. We all kind of know what this is right now to a certain extent. We believe, and initially they thought this came from snakes. They believe now that it's probably coming from some kind of bat interaction. We don't know exactly. That has not been released yet. Obviously, the most people that are susceptible to this are the elderly and those that are already prone to sickness. Cambria is a retirement community with the average age in excess of 59 years old. So we have to be really aware of that as we're looking at what's happening in our own community. It's transmitted regardless of anywhere in your climate, so it could be transmitted as easily here as it can anywhere else. And there is currently no vaccine. This does fall into the same, COVID-19 falls into the same category as other similar coronavirus issues like SARS or MERS that you've seen in the past. It just has a higher infection rate and it's a little bit faster. As you can see, this is not happening just locally. This is an international problem at this point. The WHO this morning officially finally declared this as a pandemic. That could be kind of a scary word, but it's important to remember that pandemic really refers to how widespread something is. It's not in reference to lethality. Although this does have a higher infection and mortality rate, that's not what they're referencing. That has more to do with getting people aware and informed of what's going on and making this a higher importance in how they're considering this in the future. On a national level, obviously, we should be aware that President Trump has just recently suspended all travel to Europe, at least for the next 30 days. He signed an $8 billion spending bill right now to go ahead and help FEMA and national response levels to filter that down to states as needed. We're noticing this, some significant changes across the board just in our society. Most national sports leagues are considering, the NBA already has, completely shutting down seasons or at least suspending them indefinitely. So far, 135 schools, colleges, universities have closed campuses in the United States. The historically significant and very important St. Patrick's Day parade in Chicago was canceled. I don't want to be the people to tell everybody back there that that has been canceled. And something that would be significant to a lot of us, if you can remember the last time this happened, Disneyland is closing on Saturday indefinitely until they find more stuff, more information about this and how it's being spread and how to stop it. Governor Newsom declared a state of emergency for the state of California. That's to tap in and assist in tapping into some of the monies that are available at the national level. That really is to help us prepare, find additional resources, and then get into the funding in regards to that. Additionally, just earlier today, he issued an executive order for the state of California, and it's directly tied to the California Department of Public Health, which is now specifically suggesting that we suspend all large gatherings, small gatherings where we cannot practice social distance guidelines, meetings like this. Those are discussions you're going to have at your level. It also specifically addresses some modifications to legislation like the Brown Act and giving different abilities to groups like yourself to be able to still function in government without some of the restrictions that you currently face in regards to what happens in the public. So we know, based on all the stuff that's going out right now, how we are supposed to be able to avoid some of these things. And obviously, the purpose of everything we're doing is to inform people and to limit the exposure and slow its spread. They're not going to stop this right now. And I'm not saying that to scare you, but it's a virus. They don't know exactly how fast it's moving. I mean, they can measure that percentage, but they don't know everywhere it's already been. And so those are the things that are unknowns at this point. So obviously, we want to practice social distancing. We need to probably stop shaking hands and greeting each other. We could say hi from a distance. That probably is the best course of action. We're having a lot of different information on how to wash your hands. I don't know how many people have come up to me basically over the last few days saying, I didn't know I was washing my hands wrong for the last 40 years. Well, there are ways to do that. Essentially, you're trying to scrub in like you're going to surgery. That's the kind of approach we need to do. So obviously, trying to avoid people that are already infected, hand washing appropriately, try to avoid touching your face. It's very interesting watching people in public when they're not doing it and how many times they touch everything on their face. And just remember that you should take some due diligence in trying to clean the various surfaces that you end up dealing with, your desk and your door handles and all that kind of stuff. If we go to the extent that we need to develop and start our emergency operations center in the community because of the level of impact that's happening, there are some things that we need to do. And that is specifically designed for us to help in mitigation planning and response for what's happening here locally. Now, there are different levels to that. I'll get to that in just a minute. But this is all secondary to either a natural or a man-made disaster that's going to have the following issues. It could have one of these significantly impact public health. Disrupts are anticipated to disrupt public health and medical response. Apparently, I made a mistake in my typing notes, and I got myself confused. Sorry about that. Produces media attention or all politically, or something is very politically sensitive. Leads to a regional or state request for information, or requires, or anticipated to require increased information flow from the CCSD to the community. What you find interesting is what's going on right now is ticking every single one of those boxes. It's not just a one-off, and that's why this is so important, and that's why we're taking such an aggressive stance on this. What we do need to remind everybody, it is not here yet, and we're really focused on preparing. So if we have to go through this for the CCSD internally, we're going to determine what level of activation that means. That may mean a very small group of people, including some of you, in regards to what we're going to do to maintain services throughout the community. We may need to go to a much larger scale, depending on what's happening and the limitations of what we could provide. We're going to focus on assessing the health and safety of our own personnel before that of the community, because we can't deliver those services if we're all sick and down for the count. We're going to support field-level incident coordination and request, and that's going to come from my people in the field or other health professionals. Mike McDonough, the administrator with the CCHD, is here today. And so there's a close association and working partnership we have with him. Not only do we go on calls with every incident they go on as well, we notice and get exposed to the same patients potentially. And so we work cooperatively in what we can help and provide for the community. We're going to provide situation updates to the community and then analyze our resources and improve and get more mutual aid as necessary. All of this is done for the safety and betterment of what we're trying to provide. At the county level, there's a lot of acronyms in here, and I apologize because we do that to save space, and we all know what they mean, but it's important that you're familiar with what they are. CHADOC is the County Health Agency Department Operations Center. Now, if we were to open Operations Center here, that would be something that would be run and coordinated by staff here. This is happening at the public health level at the county. So if you just refer to public health as CHADOC, you'll understand the connection there. Most of us are already familiar with OES, the Office of Emergency Services. They would be running an EOC as well, because all of these are interconnected yet have slightly different responsibilities. There are different levels of activation, just like I talked about different levels that we would do internally here at the CCSD. Currently, based on what they are doing, CHADOC has been activated at the county, and they're currently running somewhere between level 2 and level 1. This is one of those weird examples where level 1 is worse than level 3. It's kind of an inverse numbering system why they do that. What that does mean is that you'll see in my hand, I'm not going to pass this out, it's just something that the county chiefs get and the local administrators for health agencies. This is an incident action plan that they develop at CHADOC level for the county, telling us what they can provide, how they can help, what numbers and emergency stuff they can do, and it taps into all the information that we have available. This is run by Dr. Penny Borenstein, and it's with all the cooperating agencies here in the county. Once it is in place, this is the kind of stuff CHADOC is doing and summarized in these reports that we're getting. They're describing the incident. They're determining the potential impact, the initial response actions, expected duration of the event, anticipated future actions, potential risk, resource utilization, and it goes on. This is all happening now with no cases reported in this county. We're trying to stay ahead of the curve because the better prepared we are, the better we are will be if and when it does happen. What they're focusing on in all of this is communication throughout all of the emergency services field and then transmitting that to the communities at large. Case management, as it does come forward, they're going to be the ones that are controlling who's getting tested, what happens with those people, are they isolated at their home, are they being transferred somewhere else, what the triggers and activation are for this process, how they continually monitor what happens down the road, how they then report that not only to the community, but up the chain, back to the California state level of public health, to the national level, who gets the information to CDC, how does it get to WHO, all this is measured. And one of the things that's actually not on here that they deal with a lot is something called surge capacity. So our hospitals have a certain limit of what they have the ability to care for. They have the ability to surge beyond that limit to a certain extent based on need, but they have to be aware of where they are at all times. And that's all while regular life is happening. So they don't have a sudden decrease in people having heart attacks or shortness of breath or strokes or anything else. They still have to deal with those issues while providing these new services for this unknown impact to the community. For all of the EOCs, whether it is CHADOC, the public health group, whether it is OES, our Office of Emergency Services, whether it is local jurisdictions like us, we're going to be working on all of the following on the screen. We want to provide emergency personnel and public safety at all times for the community. We want to ensure that we're issuing coordinated public information to all the agencies, which is why we did this presentation, so every community is getting the same thing, maybe specified down to some uniqueness of each jurisdiction. Trying to limit human-to-human transmission, prevent transmission amplification events, and that's what you see when we're having responses like shutting down schools or stopping certain kinds of events. We're trying to eliminate the spread quickly through large events like that. Identify and isolate potentially infected individuals, then ultimately minimize social and economic impact through all kinds of multisectoral partnerships. Now, we are emboldened and empowered by a number of different laws. I'm not going to get into all the specifics on there. If you have questions, I'm automatically going to defer to district council, and he could probably delve into all of this. But there are certain things that we do have the right to do depending on the severity of the situation if it does hit here locally. And we do have the right to establish curfews for the community. We are subject to restrictions and requirements that are directives from the county health officer, Dr. Borenstein. If Dr. Borenstein, through her evaluation, suddenly decides we need to do XYZ, that is a unilateral implementation and we all fall by it because that's her level of authority. So there are a number of different laws that specifically speak to the capabilities that local government have to help limit the spread of what's going on. So finally, if I can, I would say finally, whoa, what are our next steps? What happens now? So you have an understanding, I'm sure you had a pretty good understanding already of everything that's happening on an international, national, and all the way down to regional level. But what are we doing internally? One of the first things we've done is we're working to develop what's called a continuity of operations plan. What that means is we are working internally to develop and identify what are the critical and essential functions of the CCSD. We still need to be able to get water to the community. We need to be able to take care of the wastewater. We need to provide emergency service response to the community as appropriate and under need. However, when I say it's going to affect 35% of the population, that's everybody, including us, including you. And that's a domino effect and can cripple an agency like ours. So we have to have trained people in every single role to backfill positions as necessary. For instance, if I'm down for the count, whoever I assign as the acting chief during that time frame is going to be filling my role with my responsibilities. That person's not available, it's going to fall to a shift captain. That person's not available, it's going to become one of my engineers. Ultimately, I'm going to end up relying on mutual or automatic aid, just like they would from us if they had the same issue. That is not only specific to my position. The same concept is going to apply for everything else. If for some reason our financial officer, Pam, is sick and not available, she has to have redundancies in that position to be able to fill those roles. We're still going to have people paying for water. We're still going to be having people coming in for questions. So we have to develop what those functions are and then how do we backfill as appropriate. We have to set up relationships with other agencies to be able to work outside the norm. For instance, we have multiple people in water and wastewater that we could cross-train to fill other roles that are outside their normal areas of responsibility. But at some point, they may not be available, or we might have a neighboring jurisdiction like San Simeon suddenly not be able to staff their similar roles. So can we address that now with some kind of operational agreement and send John or Jim up there to operate their facility as necessary, or vice versa? Those are the things we're developing now. Once that plan is finalized, it's going to become an annex to an overriding plan, which is our emergency operations plan, which is also in development, and this is expediting all of those processes now to make sure that that stuff is in place. Each department head is going to identify the continued basic service they need for the community and what are the responsibilities for that. The county health officer has communicated through the EMSA and through CHADOC that they will continue any protective actions and advisories as available. So they're going to keep passing these daily briefings down. We're going to keep getting this weekly incident action plan. This may increase more frequently depending on the need for the local area. Our continued conference calls between the chiefs, the EMSA, and the county health are happening regularly. They may increase in frequency as necessary. But again, all of this is done in an effort to stay ahead of what's happening right now. With all that being said, I think it's important to realize that the goal of all of this is just to keep people informed so you have an idea of what's going on, maybe beyond what you get on the 6 o'clock news, but then to also understand that there is a lot of work going on behind the scenes to ensure that you are as safe as possible. And any decisions that have to be made in regards to closure of buildings, closures of businesses, modifications to your meeting schedule, how we deliver emergency services, what matrices we follow, and which patients we allow different people in to see are all based on real science that is coming from specific agencies from the CDC and WHO, and then integrating all that information into an actionable plan, which is currently being done on a regular basis through the County Public Health Office. That being said, I'm over to you for any questions.
A very dense presentation.
it's a lot of information.
Excellent information. Not only that, but I think that the steps that CCSD, in the interactions that you're taking, the general manager is taking, are proactive rather than reactive. And I very much appreciate that that's going on for the community. There were just two questions that I had. One had to do with there were the references to supplies regarding masks and the suits and gloves and so forth. Is there any reason to think that that's become or is becoming an issue as far as being able to access those things?
It is absolutely an issue in regards to deliverable products to the community. So we have, there is a difference between emergency supplies that I maintain for my personnel to effect emergency response within the community, and then those supplies which we might have on hand for people in or at admin or wastewater or even my personnel on a daily basis in the station as people come in. Some items are still readily available, but as you can see, there are runs on things locally that don't make any sense. Like it's very difficult to go find toilet paper now for some reason, and nobody can connect those dots. But we have had some luck in regards to getting things like Purell sanitizing wipes. We have a supply of Tyvek suits and masks, gloves. All the kind of stuff we would use on a regular basis, but we're limiting on when we use that. We don't do that for every patient. We have back orders already in place for a lot of that, but part of what this continuity of operations plan is identifies what our minimum standards are. So as we move forward and as we have access to these things, we will build our supplies and have them secured somewhere in the event something like this happens in the future, and we don't have to scramble at the last minute.
Okay. Thank you. GM Wildgold, I believe you had something you wanted to...
Yes, thank you, Vice President Stidell. In addition to developing a continuity of operations for our staff, we're doing a number of other things, including coordinating with the California Special District Association, who's continuing to put out information. And even just prior to this board meeting, we received new information and guidance from the governor that is going to relax some of the Brown Act requirements. So we'll discuss with the board on future meetings whether we do those remotely, provide remote access to the public, et cetera. We're also, some of the other things we're doing is coordinating with our district council on authorities that we have within the staff and at the and then those required from the board to make decisions such as telecommuting, relaxing sick day requirements to encourage people to stay home when they're sick. We're cleaning our public restrooms three times a day now. If you happen to visit the admin office at the front desk, you'll see those staffers that will provide service to you will be sanitizing their hands while asking you to do the same. And so that's for your health as well as the health of the staff, because we want to take care of everyone. So we're really looking at all activities that we do from A to Z, step by step every day, and asking questions such as, do we really need to do this, and do we need to do it now, or can we postpone it, can we do it a different way? And so we're continuing to do that as the situation rapidly evolves, and it's changing by the hour today, but it's been changing pretty rapidly.
Okay. Thank you. Director Rice?
Thank you very much for the presentation. I'm glad we're taking this seriously, and I know that our staff in the wastewater department, they're not quite sure yet. At least they weren't a week ago when I was paying attention. Maybe they know now, because as you said, it's rapidly developing. But they aren't sure of the risk, additional risk to wastewater workers. So, and I'm sure that our utility supervisor is on top of that. But that's something I didn't even think about. I'm sure they think about it all the time since they deal with the wastewater. On hand washing, just a point of funniness from Texas, believe it or not. Wash your hands like you've just sliced jalapenos and you're about to take out your contacts. Mm-hmm. If you've ever cut up jalapenos, you know you don't want to put your contacts in or out unless you've really carefully washed your hands. It helped me. Having a song to sing doesn't really do much for me, but I definitely... I know we right now don't have anybody posting on social media and we don't have a policy yet, but since the things are changing so rapidly, is there any way that we can connect for the public somewhere where they are? Because they aren't coming to the website as frequently, I don't think, as they're going to other places. So is there maybe a way we can push that information out?
It is possible. I had spoke with Haley and, with permission from the general manager, had a couple of different links added to the CCSD website. They're right. Also on the 24/7 NCEP website, and they are direct links to either CDC or WHO, and those are updated daily.
Okay.
So that addresses part of the issue, but yes, you're absolutely right. Getting this out on a regular basis through other platforms would be helpful as well. We don't have a social networking policy that addresses that at this point.
Yeah. The Board of Supervisors just passed a social media policy this year, so maybe that's something that we can have the policy committee look at. Are we doing anything cooperatively with the hotels? Because if there's no cases in San Luis right now, part of the problem would be people traveling from places where it has hit the community. And from what I hear, you don't even know you're sick right away, so you could be contagious for almost 2 weeks before getting sick. So is there anything that we're doing, like either with the tourism board or the hotels in general or the chamber, to try and get out a message of...
Not all from our end. However, it's a good idea, and we could actually look into that. The public health office is the one that's pushing out most of that information now, and rather than reinventing that wheel, just putting them in connection with what's going on a regular basis would probably make the most sense.
So just before the meeting, we received information from the Cambria Healthcare District on that very issue, and the California Health Department issued some guidance. There's a memo out now that talks to limiting large organizations or large gatherings, but also guidance for small gatherings. And so we're pushing that out. One other thing I didn't mention that we're doing is we're reaching out to all those users of the Vets Hall in the coming month, such as the big bicycle tour, Eroica, who has just decided to postpone the event until October. So we're reaching out to all the individual private events that are renting the hall here just to let them know what some of the policies are. And in some cases, I have a feeling that they'll look at this, think twice about having their event, and more than likely, I think, they'll probably postpone their events as well, is what we're finding.
Well, it looks like our audience already uses social distancing by keeping themselves spread out among the various chairs. Maybe if we are still going to be holding meetings in this room, it's large enough that we don't have to have the chairs right next to each other, and that might suggest to people.
And Mike McDonough is in the audience. I don't know if you care to offer him time to comment.
I'd certainly like to have him approach and introduce himself so that we can welcome him to the community.
Well, thank you. Distinguished board members and staff. Mike McDonough, I met some of you, most of you. I'm the administrator for the Cambria Community Healthcare District. I do have a background in emergency management and disaster planning, so this type of event is not foreign to me. I just want to briefly just let you know that we are very aware of the situation. I am in constant communication with the state and local representatives and local here with the fire chief. And every few hours we're emailing, we're calling on the phone and so forth. So there's a very good flow. We have a very robust system in place in the state already. And we're just in the process of turning it on and using it as and scaling it up or down as necessary. So my biggest job right now is just reassuring everyone that we are capable and ready and prepared for an event such as this. And we will handle it as we do any disaster. I want everybody to feel a little bit of calm and just be reassured that we're taking this extremely seriously and we have a lot of resources that we can bring to bear. Just one tiny example, I've had a lot of calls, well, what happens if the hospitals are overwhelmed? Where am I going to go? State of California purchased, just as, again, this tiny example of the overall plan, the state of California a few years ago purchased 3 portable hospitals, 800-bed hospitals that, if called upon, can be set up and running in 72 hours. So they could theoretically, say, put one in Sacramento, one in Fresno, one in San Diego, and have an 800-bed hospital fully equipped, staffed, ICU, surgery, pharmacy, x-ray, lab, the whole nine yards. Fully self-contained. They have their own water system, sewer treatment, electricity, the whole HVAC, you name it. I saw one set up, and they demoed one a couple years ago, and it was quite impressive. So we have those kind of capabilities, along with other things. Locally here in Cambria, we're small, but we're mighty. We have excellent trained personnel. We have backup systems in place, both if they need to take care of the community or we need to take care of them. So I did place across social media. I did place some information on local social media a few days ago. I will continue to provide those updates as I receive them. And my cell phone number is on there. So I want people to feel like they can call and ask those questions. And I get 100 of the same question a day, and that's okay. We want everybody to feel good about what's going on, and we'll do our best. That's what we do. Thank you for giving me a few minutes. But I'm very much supportive of the chief. He did an excellent presentation, and he's shown you a very small view of a very large system that is ready and capable.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Vice President Stido?
Yes, ma'am.
I just had a quick question for you.
Apologize.
That's okay. I just had a quick question for you. maybe if there's two questions that everybody's calling, you said to get the same question 100 times a day, maybe you could answer one or two of them just
certainly
really briefly so that people who are watching the meeting, which could be 30 or 40 people, we could reach.
And most of it is communication, like the chief alluded to. The most common question is, what is the healthcare district doing about the coronavirus disaster? So I'm trying to get that word out that there's a lot going on behind the scenes that the general public is not aware of, just by its nature. So we're trying to improve those communication flows a little bit so people know that, you know, we're not just sitting around waiting for somebody to get sick. We're doing a lot of proactive stuff. So that's probably the most common question. And then the other one is, well, what do I do? What do I do if I get sick, or my family member gets sick, or somebody in my community gets sick? And that's, again, I'm pushing out information, what to do. What to do to protect yourself and your family, or in the event you get sick. It is likely, based on all the computer modeling, we don't have cases in this county yet, but we are likely to get cases in this county. And when that occurs, we will modify our system accordingly, and we will take care of people's needs. But it does involve, I will mention, as they alluded to, modifying the day-to-day operations. We may do things differently, and that's already in our plans. But you may see things like the modification of the Brown Act, just so that people are not in this, you know, we don't have 100 people in the same room together. Or other things to, you know, how do we modify our ambulance operations? Do we do things differently? Do we upstaff? Do we call in other resources from other areas? Things like that. And it's already in the plan. So, thank you. Any other questions?
Thank you. No, but I will add, if there are any questions that come to folks after either having viewed this or those in the audience, please feel free to forward any of those questions relative to CCSD to our general manager, who will make sure that that gets the resource that can answer the question, and in the case of anything associated with the CCHD, to their resources.
Yes, all the administrators. We have, for several months now, been collaborating on just information flow, and we continue to do so. We're sharing information back and forth to help each other out, so that's very helpful.
Again, and thank you, and again, welcome to the community.
Thank you very much. Okay.
So we move to item four, which is public comment. Right now, I have four slips. The first is Christine Hendricks.
Well, thank you. That was certainly an impressive presentation, and I'm glad to have everyone on board here. This is a change of pace. The R&I committee recently discussed reimbursement for travel at its meeting. This came up with regard to both staff and committee members visiting a desalination plant in Orange County. I asked the board to direct staff to postpone this planned trip while the EWS CDP is being worked out. Until the plant has a permit to operate, there is no need for staff to travel to Orange County. Cambria's EWS has not even submitted a completed application for the required coastal development permit yet. Has staff written a project description? If so, please share it with the public. The board was quite clear about directing staff to write a project description for the existing plant as it has been constructed at its November 21st meeting. The EWS remains far from operational, and the permit application, now 6 years overdue, is not yet in sight. I asked the board to direct the general manager to cancel current plans for this Orange County visit and present them at a later date when the permitting has been accomplished. At that time, the board can evaluate the visit as to what advantages staff can expect to gain. Perhaps it can be accomplished via Skype rather than requiring staff to take time away from Cambria. And perhaps as we learn from this pandemic, we will be developing new tools for working remotely. Thank you.
Thank you. The second slip is from Hank Kresick.
Good afternoon. What I'm going to follow up on is your fire chief's comments. And first, a note of appreciation and some embarrassment and apology, and then a continuing concern. The last page that your fire chief presented talked about continuity of operations plans. And a little over 2 weeks ago, in fact, just before they made the official announcement about the concerns at a federal level, I sent an email to John and to our general manager, Charlie, and copied your president and vice president. Within hours, John responded saying that he would provide operational staffing support on an emergency basis as he could to back us up in San Simeon. We have two operators, a father and son team we had, and the son just quit here, I guess, 2 weeks ago. And so now we maybe have a new person in training. So we're down to one experienced operator. So that was really timely, I thought. And John, I want to thank, as well as Ray, who I think is still here, because he immediately got in touch with me as well. So you were on it. And then later on, we heard from our general manager who said, thank you, John. That's all he said. But he didn't really say he was going to do anything. So nothing happened for 2 weeks, although your staff contacted or tried to contact our staff to get the first meeting set up for some orientation toward our water and sewer for continuity, the top item on your Cambria Fire Department's list. Yesterday at the board meeting, when asked about when is the meeting going to occur, our general manager indicated that he just said, no, it's not going to happen. He's not going to do it in very stern terms. I mean, he just said, no, that's it. And so I was disappointed, and I'm a little bit embarrassed because of that. And I want to say thanks for the time and apologize for the time that John and Ray put in responding to emails and going back and forth and so on. I really appreciate that. It is concerning that our community is simply not engaging in an opportunity to provide critical emergency backup that was offered from Cambria. So I thank you again for offering, and we may come back. Hopefully we won't have to, but I know you'll keep that offer open in the event there is a real emergency. So thank you.
I'm getting support in my clock operation. The next slip that I have for public comment is Dr. Elizabeth Bettenhausen.
Thank you very much, Madam Vice President. I'm Elizabeth Bettenhausen from Cambria. And my family and I visited here 30 years ago. One of the things we always looked at was in San Simeon and looked at the monarch butterflies filling the eucalyptus trees, just packed in there by the hundreds of thousands. And I was reminded of that when I came walk to the meeting today or walked to the bus, because I saw one monarch by a Pride of Madeira on the street I live on. And I think I got a good photograph of it, I hope, because we need to document these animals. As I document the snowy plover, and we document the fish when we can find them in the creeks here. And I bring that up today because I've been struck, as I'm doing lots of research on the coronavirus and paying attention to epidemiology and what they're discovering. In the past 20 years, we've had a dramatic increase of the coronavirus and transmission to human beings on planet Earth. And we're discovering that the transmission is getting faster and faster, and that is because of what we human beings are doing to other animals. That is to say, we are reducing the environment of many species, including the bats in China. It's not snakes, by the way. We always jump on those poor snakes. It was not snakes. That's confirmed now. It's a transmission from certain bats. We have 1,000 bats so far, 1,000 species. We've looked at 50. in terms of the viruses that they're carrying. They are becoming more transmissible to humans because we are reducing the habitat of the animals. We're causing the coronavirus by how we treat planet Earth. Now, if you think about it, in the last 6 weeks, we've had a lot of news from China, haven't we? It has gone global almost instantaneously with social media, etc. We are seeing, friends, the dimensions of the climate crisis. The coronavirus is a perfect example of how the crisis is spreading globally because of human activity. And now I'll sit 6 feet from Mike Lyons. We checked just now. any day. But I like to talk to him, too, so we both have good, strong voices. But I want to say that we have not yet begun to consider how we as a community of Cambria are right now contributing to the climate crisis. We have to look at the specifics. And I know the general manager and I disagree passionately on this because he informed me it's not happening here. But I think we have to use the coronavirus example now to begin to understand, as human beings, the effect of our actions globally without delay, almost instantaneously. And it doesn't matter who's sitting in the Oval Office, although it's sometimes more entertaining to listen to certain occupants thereof. Thank you.
Thank you. So what we had ahead of us now is the consent agenda, and I do have a slip for the consent agenda. I guess maybe what I will do is ask first, though, if any of the directors are viewing anything as far as the consent agenda that they would want to take action toward, to withdraw or to discuss. Okay. That being said, then, Christine Hendricks.
Christine Hendricks again. I was referring to item 5C, the banking powers for Cambria's CSD. I would hope that you would take this up separately. I found the order of signers odd. I asked the board to reorder the list to rank order signers from the president, vice president, and then by length of service on the board, which makes more sense and provides a way forward to continuity. Thank you.
Do I hear a motion for the consent agenda?
Yeah, I'll move that we approve the consent agenda as it is.
And a second?
I'll second that.
I just have one really quick question on the salary schedule. We haven't been paying the other salary. It's just we're updating the schedule. They've been paid the amount that it's being corrected to. Is that right? The salary schedule is what I'm talking
about.
Sorry,
if you're talking about not the particular IAFF.
No, not the IAFF.
But the correction of
The correction.
Of the counting technician series, correct.
Okay, thank you. I just wanted to be sure we were paying the correct amount on the paychecks. Thank you.
So, pull the board for a vote, please.
Director Pearson?
Aye.
Director Howell?
Aye.
Director Rice?
Aye.
Vice President Steidel?
Aye. Moving on to regular business, item 6A. Will you be handling introduction of this, GM Wine?
I will. So, Vice President Steidel, agenda item 6A is discussion and consideration of adoption of Resolution 08-2020, authorizing an application for grant funding under the Water Smart Program. I'll have the Mr. Ray D'Anzo introduce this, but the staff is recommending the Board of Directors consider adoption of this resolution for grant funding under the Water Smart Program, which is administered by the U.S. Department of Interior's Bureau of Reclamation. Ray, do you want to come up and talk about it?
Thank you. I'm Ray D'Enzo. I wanted to introduce this item. It's, I believe, a feel-good item for this program because it is an opportunity for us to expand our water conservation efforts, specifically for a program that we want to propose. The actual program is not officially under contract yet, although we want to move forward with it. Our staff moved in the direction of the board. It was the board's policy from a few years ago for water conservation and move forward with a water conservation rebate program. The rebate program was adopted, was in the budget for fiscal year 1920 for $7,700. Currently, we want to move forward with $7,500 for rebates for this particular meter called the Flume. I know some of you all are familiar with it, but it's a very easy meter, easy to install. Average homeowner can install it without a plumber's help, and it provides really excellent data. Most of the, as you find, water conservation efforts are greatly improved when people are more aware of their water usage, and that's documented, you know, throughout. Even just installing a simple meter reduces water usage. And now, like, if there's more awareness of leak detection, that even increases it even more. So the current proposed program is we want to have a rebate program for 50 of these units to be available for residences to use. This grant program will increase that by another 50. We hope that we will be approved for the grant. We'll know in a couple of months whether we're approved or not. But the plan is, the phase one part of the program is that we will spend the budget, the budgeted $7,500 committed to this Flume meters. And phase two, should we get the grant, we would want to have another 50 meters committed to the program. So that's our recommendation, is that we move forward with the grant, because right now the grant application has been submitted, but in order to complete the process, we needed to have a board resolution to receive the monies.
Thank you. Question, when you say meter, you don't necessarily mean in terms of water meters the way that I think most folks probably think of it. This is actually a sensor that goes on the meter.
Thank you for the clarification. I misspoke on that. Yeah, it's basically a device that wraps right around the meter, and it acts like a magnetic sensor almost, and it uses the Wi-Fi system, and it's controlled through a smartphone app through the cloud, and you can get really good data from it.
Thank you. I do have neighbors in my neighborhood who actually are using these and are quite pleased with being able to monitor and actually get some kind of insight to the way that they actually use their water by going out and monitoring it when they're doing certain actions with the use of water. So I think it's a very interesting opportunity. Are there any questions from any of the board members? Director Rice?
First question is, if the retail price is $199, why aren't we getting like a discount off of that, since we're guaranteeing them, essentially, if we get the grant purchase of 100 of these? Or why are we paying $150 and the customer pays $49? We should be getting at least a little bit of a break on the retail price, it seems to me.
It's a good question. It's possibly a negotiating ploy for future units. So,
and then would we be on the hook if we don't get the grant, because this requires matching funds? So looks like we're putting the matching funds up first before we know whether we get the grant. Would we be obligated to buy the other 50 with another $7,500 out of our account if we don't get the grant?
Yes, we are. on the hook, if you say, for $7,500. It doesn't mean if not a lot of people use it, if say only five units are used, then only five units will be bought. So that's the real thing.
So one point of clarification. So we're already budgeted for $7,500.
Right.
So we're simply asking this grant to match our already existing budgeted amount. So it's basically extra money that we wouldn't have already had. But we're already planning to spend that $7,500 on this conservation program, which has not yet been finalized, I should add.
So reading through this, it says that our staff wouldn't have to do anything, but then it says our staff would be down marketing it at the farmers market. So that's kind of inconsistent. And I, before I continue to criticize this particular item, I do want to say, I like your thinking out of the box and trying to find ways to make money so that we can have these conservation efforts and these efficiency efforts in place. 100% behind that concept. There's a reason why we have the policy that the board should look at the grants if there's matching funds, because even though it's a small amount, it does obligate the district monetarily. And to not have... I mean, did we talk to anybody else that provides this kind of similar equipment? Is there another company? I understand they're a local business, which, you know, makes sense, but...
Yeah, so I think we lean forward probably a little too much on outlining this program, which, again, is not mm-hmm. yet in place. Ray, in addition to his tour of the Orange County groundwater system plant, he's also meeting with Flow Technologies on Friday to look at yet another conservation device. So we're moving out on a conservation program with a series of devices and technologies. They're not yet ready for prime time to outline, and we shouldn't be delving into the details of that yet because we're not ready, but. Again, we're already budgeted for $7,500, so now we're looking to utilize the funds that were budgeted for this year.
But we could also be using them for the $200 rebates for high-efficiency washers. I mean, there's things that are already in a rebate program for lower-flow toilets, for high-efficiency washers, that we could use that money for if we were promoting that. And again, I understand, I'm the last person to want to be objecting to us putting in things that help people understand their water use. But when I was first on the board, I got one of those readers that reads your meter, you know, stick it on your fridge and it shows you kind of live time. It didn't work that great, partially because the technology is so old and partially because, you know, the ocean air degrades all of the components. So as we get toward a meter replacement program, we don't want to end up having a situation where we've got incompatibility or more difficulty replacing the meter because of something like the flume. And again, I appreciate it, but we also have programs already in place for people who don't already have high-efficiency washers or they want to replace their toilets or their shower heads. All of those things are outlined in the policy that we approved in 2013. So for those reasons and the fact that I don't think that we should have to make up the difference of the full retail, I'm not really in support of this particular item. It's not that I don't think it's important to have these things, but what we're doing is we're giving our entire customer base so they can determine the people who should be offered these flume devices. According to this, it says we give them all of our customer data so they can determine who's eligible. I don't know what makes somebody eligible, and it means that we're giving all 4,000 of our accounts information, and there's 100 people that theoretically will benefit. Is there a wider community benefit to this at that scale for this community?
Well, I read that statement a little differently, I guess. I think that it wasn't a matter of the numbers being provided so they could choose. The numbers were provided so that they could verify that it was a member of our community within the CCSD Water District who would be an appropriate applicant for it. It wasn't a matter of some nefarious go out and, and find somebody to...
No. I wasn't suggesting nefariousness. I was suggesting more that there's a reason why utility customers' data is private and not part of the public record in the state of California. If we are turning over all of our records, as opposed to, let's say, they promote it, I decide I want one in my house, I own my house, so I then apply, then I'm fine with the CCSD giving my information to that company so that I can get this product, especially because it's essentially $50 and nothing else. But if I'm not applying to get one of those, why should they get my data?
Question.
Yes.
Director Rice, this is a question for Director Rice. I'm not seeing in this write-up where they're proposing to hand over all of our user data. So am I missing something?
Let me find where I have that.
I do see some privacy issue here, but that I'm looking for that particular thing you're referring to.
Let me find it if somebody else has comments.
Well, may I clarify a couple of things? So first of all, the answer is the reason why, Flume would have the data is because it's through their cloud system that all this data is going to. So, but it doesn't mean that, they're going to share it with the public. It's private data. And even the data that we would share, it's something that we would never share individual meter data. It would be in an aggregate basis only. So, and I also want to clarify all of those other conservation items, such as washer rebates and things like that. Those are also in our radar too. A lot of those right now is very staff intensive. There's a lot of inspections that need to be done, and quite frankly, we don't have the staff for that yet because there were other priorities relating to things that we were doing with conservation. But I also wanted to say that this opportunity came up because it was the Bureau of Reclamation that has a program, and it's stated here that the Intelligent Leak Detection Rebate Project is what this was about. We probably would have brought this to you a lot sooner, except that we didn't realize until not too long ago that we were actually eligible for this. And so that's why we took the initiative to take the opportunity. We thought that, this was also, this wasn't a program that was out of the blue. It was suggested in our water use efficiency plan. So, and this device is known to be very effective in other communities, not just your neighbors, but in other places too. So, I hope that those positive things are taken away from this. Other than we're not neglecting all of those other programs that we could be pursuing as well. So,
Director Howell,
thank you. I'll come back to the privacy issue in a minute, but I'm a little unclear about the $7,500. I'm hearing two different. There seems to be two different $7,500. Is that the case?
Yes. So the $7,500 is budgeted
already
in a line item in our budget, fiscal year 1920. There's a $7,725 is the exact number, but we're using $7,500 of that for this program. And so we're calling that phase one. If we get this matching other $7,500, we can increase it because, it would be cool if we had more units that are available. I think that these are going to be gobbled up, quite frankly, pretty quickly. So, but it opens the door for other issues too. And to answer the other question about, yes, administrative, the cool thing about this is Flume is handling all the marketing, the admin, the rebate processing, all of those things that, staff, doesn't have to be burdened with. The issue with the farmer's market, that was actually something that we've already been talking about relating to water conservation in general, not specific necessarily to this, but we wanted to have a farmer's market presence to talk about water conservation in general.
I can answer your question, Director Howell. I found it. It's on page 52 at the very bottom. It says the district will provide its logo, current list of customer account identification numbers to determine rebate eligibility. Now, the rebate eligibility, does that just mean they have to be in our district? Or does that mean, because the reason I ask that question is there's a distinction. We used to provide installation of instant hot water heaters, but you had to be using more than 12 units every billing cycle in order to be eligible for that benefit, because there was a benefit to the larger community by reducing your water use. So I think that may be what I had in mind, whereas the account identification numbers for eligibility may be specific to because they live in CCSD territory. Do you know the answer to that?
You know, I'm afraid I don't have that off. I don't have that off the top of my brain.
Again, I appreciate the effort, and I hate that I don't like this, but it goes. I mean, we developed that grant policy for a reason, so that we weren't obligating the district without the board having a chance to say, because we don't want somebody to apply for a grant, they get the grant, but then we say no, that doesn't work. And I know this is a small amount, but it's kind of a big thing to be consistent.
But they're not committing funds without approval to the extent that this was part of the budget that was approved by the board.
I understand what you're saying with that. I do understand that. But it also gets obligated, and in this situation, we'd be paying the cash up front, and then the $7,500 if we get the grant covers the second phase.
That would potentially be something else to add to the budget down line.
So
if we obtained the second $7,500, the first.
Okay, so we're not obligated for phase two. Is that what I'm?
If we don't get the grant. We're not obligated, no.
Yeah. And then we address that as a budget item. Right.
Yeah. Okay, now I have some other questions. Okay.
Dr. Howell.
Thank you. Privacy issues. As soon as I saw this, customers will be asked to consent to share their water use data with the CCSD through the Flume utility portal. Well, I can understand. Immediately that raises a red flag. So I would like, before you commence with actually instituting this program, I think it might be for one thing, I'd like to hear from Mr. Carmel regarding this issue, because as I recall, during our last drought, there was proposal to publish the egregious users, and we were told that we cannot do that because that is private information. So if a customer's water usage is private, then I think we need to have some reassurances from whoever is keeping that data. We need to know what their security arrangements are before you go forward with this. And so I would like to hear something about that. If you can't answer that now, I think before you go forward, you really need to check that, because it sounds like a great idea, like a lot of great ideas, but as we've come across this problem with privacy lately, in general, I think if people are not a little bit sensitive to that, they should be. So I'd like to just hear that addressed a little more thoroughly as you go forward in this. That would please me greatly. But I do like the idea.
Yes. Yeah. We will verify that. I mean, obviously, people can hack into data and all of that. But that's not what we're talking about here. I think that. This company has, in good faith, done this program, and like with any kind of cloud systems, there's high securities with cyber data that's included in this. But we will verify that to be sure of that.
May I direct a question to Mr. Carmel? Do you have any concerns about this?
I think it's an excellent issue. Just looking at the staff report, I relied on the fact that customers will be asked to consent to share their water use data. But I think knowing where it's going and how it's being protected is good information and should be available.
Any other questions or discussion?
I have one more. Sorry. One last question. I presume, am I correct, that these Flume devices would be compatible with any new meters which you might be ultimately, because I understand yes. We are evolving.
Yes, it will be compatible with any meter that we would use, yes.
Any more discussion items? So, I would like to put forward to hear a motion.
Yeah, I move that we adopt the resolution 08-2020 authorizing application for grant funding under the Water Smart program.
And a second?
I will second that.
And we'll take the vote, please.
Director Pearson?
Aye.
Director Howe?
Aye.
Director Rice?
No.
Vice President Seidel?
Aye.
And it passes 3-1. Thank you. Okay, moving on to regular business item 6B.
Yes, Vice President Steidel, agenda item 6B is discussion and consideration of requests from Greenspace for transfer of irrigation meter. Staff is recommending that the Board of Directors discuss and consider the request from Greenspace to approve the transfer of an irrigation meter from property owned by Jesse Arnold on Pierce Avenue to Greenspace's Creekside Reserve located at 2264 Center Street, and the request for a fee waiver. We'll have discussion or presentation first from our district council, and then as it relates to the fiscal impact, our utilities manager will add some additional information there as well.
Madam Vice President, members of the board, I'll be very brief. Greenspace is requesting that the board approve the transfer of an irrigation meter being donated by Jesse Arnold from Pierce Street to the Creekside Reserve on Center Street. The district has no history of irrigation meter transfers, but Section 8.04.100 of the Municipal Code permits such a transfer based on certain criteria, in this case, that it's reduced water demand. Historically, this meter averaged 9 units annually over the last 9 years. Greenspace estimates using 20 to 60 gallons a week, which equates to approximately 4 units annually. Greenspace will use the meter to support its Monterey Pine Tree Propagation Program, an important program for Cambria. Greenspace requests a waiver of fees, which are actual staff costs incurred, and which requires a $750 deposit. The district engineer will speak on that issue in a moment. Should the board want to approve this item, the transfer will require an agreement. Staff recommends restricting the amount of water that can be used and any other conditions the board may want to include. Please provide direction on the fee waiver. Staff will return with a transfer agreement should you move forward with this.
I'm not sure that was my cue. Okay. So anyway, but the initial or the additional discussion about fiscal impact, which is unclear, unfortunately, in the fiscal impact, was typical installation costs, because it says that district will waive any fees related to the transfer. We weren't clear about what all those fees would be, because installation costs for, say, a typical residence to tap into our main, like a 15-foot service runs about $3,500 for something like that. So, and you know, this one here, it's going to be a longer trenching, I believe, for this particular installation. So I just wanted the board to consider that, because typically we do, when we do a meter installation, you know, a new service installation, we ask for a $5,000 deposit, and usually about, on average, about $3,500 of that is used and the rest of it given back. But if you wanted to include installation costs as part of the fee waiver, we wanted you to consider that, you know, that those installation costs as in consideration for the fiscal impact. So that was it. Yeah.
Yeah. Director Pearson.
So you're saying that the actual fiscal impact to us is going to be in excess of $3,500?
I'm saying, well, for this particular install, it's probably going to be about $5,500. So,
okay.
Yeah, because it's a longer run. Trenching costs will be more, the meter, saddle, trenching, valving and all of that. Those will be right around usually $2,000, and then there's also equipment that we use for the particular install, all of that. And, you know, because of the longer run, this particular one I'm going to estimate is about, you know, it's probably going to go past $5,000. So,
okay, thank you. So a question for staff also is, has Mr. Arnold agreed that he's not going to irrigate that property anymore? Is that how we're saving the money? I mean, saving the water?
Well, he won't have a meter.
Well, he won't have a meter, but his property is right next door to it, and he's got an extensive garden there.
I was under the assumption that that's the case, but if we do have an agreement, it'll be very clear. It'll be clearly articulated.
Okay, so the agreement would include that he's not to be using water on that property anymore?
That it's to be used exclusively on the Creekside Reserve property, which I don't think is his, but I don't know the physical layout.
Okay, so...
Okay. We'll limit the total amount of water used.
Yeah,
I think that's that's the point.
Yeah, and I guess I'm dancing around a subject that really doesn't make any difference, really, because it's not enough water to worry about. So,
is there a history on what the water had been for that meter that had been being used for irrigation?
Yeah, that's in here,
and that's
nine units
a year,
right?
Okay, so if he keeps doing 9 units and they add another 4 units, that's not... We have a lot of water, so it doesn't matter.
So, is there any more conversation by board members?
Hold on. I think they want to clarify what's going on.
Can I ask a question while they're...
Please.
What other fees would we be waiving besides the cost of the installation? Is there normally some other fee that is charged for this kind of a thing,
connection fee?
When a meter is moved?
Like the admin, there's admin fees, I think that was reflected in the fiscal impact.
Oh, good. Thanks.
So, and I, you know, that was already mentioned.
So my question is that $750 deposit, is that an assessment of what that 10% fee would be, or is that been replaced by the estimate of the $5,500?
I think the $750 is for the administrative fees.
That is the admin.
And then there's a 10% overhead charge on top.
Right. Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Let's get some clarification here.
All right. Andrea Wogsland, Green Space.
Hi, thank you guys. Andrea Wogsland, Executive Director of Green Space. Thank you guys for putting this on the agenda today, reviewing this request. We got a call from the donor looking for a property that a nonprofit owned that would benefit the community. And so we did a kind of a careful review of potentially what property would be most appropriate for the community. And so we have two APN numbers on the Creekside Reserve. If you have an assessor's map, you can see what actual parcel it is on that property. We reviewed where there's actually already I think at one point there was a water meter there. So there's no, from what we understand, there's no digging involved. Of course, you know, that would need to be additionally looked at on your end, but from our end, that was not, but we just wanted to, because there was nothing in the ordinance that gave any guidance around it, we put it in the letter per the donor's request. So the other thing is that, so the four units that you said, it's not 9 plus 4, because the 9 was what was on an annual basis at Jesse Arnold's property. So that goes away, and we take the meter at the Creekside Reserve, which is then 4. So it's not a combination, it's just one. So I just wanted to clarify a couple of those points.
Okay, so for clarification,
yeah.
What you're saying is that Mr. Arnold is not going to water that piece of property anymore from his own meter.
The irrigation meter that he's...
No, he's got a meter on his house right next door, right? So he could irrigate his own water meter. It's reasonable for him to do that. There's nothing that says he can't. I was just wondering if he was going to do that or not.
If he chooses to, there's no water savings.
I can't. He moved away from Cambria, which is really the impetus for this at all. So I can't speak to the water use on his personal property. I'm not aware of his residences. That information was not divulged to me. I haven't been given any information on that, other than he doesn't intend to use that space as a garden anymore because he doesn't live here. That's the only information I could give. As to his intent with his residential property, I've never had any communication with him about.
And he still owns the APN that he's transferring the meter from,
right?
I assume.
Right.
Okay, good. Right. Thank you. That clarifies.
Okay.
Appreciate that.
No problem. Okay. Yeah. I just wanted to clarify that. The other thing was there were potentially other costs that Melissa Bland brought up that she wanted to make sure that we included as a discussion item. And so because it's such a, we've had this property for 2 decades now, and it's been such a great community benefit, and that also we have the tree propagation program that we'd like to continue, that we do run that well below cost. And so these kind of combination of factors are why we feel like it would be a really good community benefit. And so any fees would be you would have to come up with it, because there's nothing in the ordinance that gives you any guidance about this. Mm-hmm. So you have that discretion. Green Space's budget is a little over $100,000 a year. We personally really don't have, you know, of course we would love to accept this meter because of the community benefit, but, you know, we don't have a budget for these kinds of things right now. So it would be in the public benefit to take that into account when you're thinking about any kind of fiscal impact there. So I think that's it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay.
The other slip that I have is Mary Webb.
Mary Webb, Green Space. Hi, everybody. Haven't seen you guys for a while. And first meeting, I think, since General Manager Weigold has started. So good to see you after a year, I think it's been. The meter that's being, well, first of all, it's an irrigation meter. So we can't answer the questions about what type of other meters Jesse Arnold may have on his own personal property. If he's got a house, he's got a residential meter. Mm-hmm. So I don't, an irrigation meter is different than a residential meter. So I imagine if he does have another meter, it's a residential meter. Mm-hmm. And unless he combines those two parcels, as far as I know, the ordinance says you cannot water property next to you with a meter on the wrong parcel. That's why you know each meter gets its own parcel. There is a line right there in our gravel area of that front parcel, because the CSD was digging up water line there not long ago, maybe a couple of years ago. So it's actually right there. It's I don't know where the long 30 feet or whatever comes from. Hesperian Lane is also right next to that parcel. So I know there's a CSD water line, a main water line, and a sewer line that runs all along Hesperian. And then that front parcel also did have a house on it. That's where the Chinese temple was located. So there was water going to that front parcel already. So it's got to be pretty easy to tap in right there. The irrigation meter, the use in the past, I would say there's it's used as much as 35 units in a year. Mm-hmm. And so I don't think we're going to use anywhere near that, but I don't think it should be limited to anything less than 35 units. That's the historical use. As I think it's been a low of 4 and a high of 35 units. All we're going to do is water these trays of Monterey pine seedlings and put like a lean-to kind of a thing out in the front of the property there so that we can pass out seedlings to the community so they can grow them to replace them as mitigation for lots of the pine trees that are being removed out of our forest every day. So if there is a cost and if it is that high, I would also like to come back. I would like to see that all in writing, and I would like to see a comparison of what the charges were for the Historical Society for their water meter that was given to them for the schoolhouse property and how they were tapped in and what the charges and stuff were there and what their water use is being charged at. Is it being limited? You know, but what the charges were for the transfer of that meter. Okay, thank you.
So, question, Mr. Carmel. It seems like there are two actions, actually, that we would be voting on. One has to do with the actual transfer itself, any particular restrictions, and the other is anything relative to the fee wavering.
Right. Well, both would be embodied in the agreement, but those are two separate issues.
Separate motions. Right. Is there any additional discussion from anyone? Director Rice?
I appreciate the last question that Mary Webb asked, because I think it's important that we are consistent across how we treat different nonprofit organizations, and hopefully there's not going to be a lot of these. We're a very small town. This is probably going to be a case-by-case no matter what we do. But being fair to organizations, I think, is especially important. So having those questions answered, I think, is a good idea. I've known Jesse since my NCAC days, and I'm sad that he's no longer a full-time member of this community. I hope he will come visit. And I again, don't want to be super critical of staff, but 20 gallons a week, even if you're using 60 gallons a week, that's 2 5-gallon jugs every day carried onto the property. That doesn't seem like enough that it would be worth all the trouble and expense. Now, I understand the impetus of Mr. Arnold wanting to donate this irrigation meter. I am for making sure that our public spaces are well taken care of. I'm sorry that the Swartzes aren't here today, because I don't know that 60 gallons per week for tree propagation when they're brand new is enough. But it seems like a big headache if all you're using is 20 gallons a week. That's way different than 35. I mean, if you're using 20 gallons a week, you're using something like 9 units a year, which is not that much. But you only have to go up to 65 to get up to somewhere around 20 units a year. Still not very much compared to residential uses. But I think there's a few things in here that I'd like to see to make sure that we're having consistent treatment among different transfers for these two different organizations. Because honestly, I don't remember what the deal was with the Historical Society and having that building there. I remember talking about it briefly, but it was a while ago, and I don't have that clear memory. I definitely think that it's kind of pushing it to say that it would maybe save water, especially since there were several years where the water use was almost zero on the irrigation meter. So I think if we want to be flexible and stretch that meaning to an understanding that we come to, I'm okay with that, as long as we all kind of acknowledge that we need to be clear and careful about if there is a restriction, how do we deal with that? Is it something that we can, I mean, it's an irrigation meter. They can't attach a bathroom to it, something like that, or wash down the sidewalks. I'm just not sure that I have the information I need to make a decision.
What they're asking us to do is move the irrigation thing, and it may be that the line is already there, and all they need is just us to put the meter in, and it's going to be pretty inexpensive, and then they're going to put a tap on that to put a spigot on it, and then a garden hose, and off they go. And they're going to use a little bit of water, and I don't remember what we did with Historical Society either, but, I think allowing this to go through is reasonable and fair, and I don't have any objection to this. So I think we can just move forward on this.
One last question is the lot that we're, because I know on a residential meter, if it's moved, that we require the lot is retired that it was moved from. So is there anything in this situation that we could... That we can make that a requirement that lot can't get a meter on it, or I don't know what all of the ins and outs of that part of the residential, but we could use that theoretically as a guideline.
Well, we could restrict use of this meter to this parcel. I think that does the same thing, and I don't think the schoolhouse meter has come to the board yet. That's why you don't remember it.
Okay,
she has a relief.
Woo. So. But theirs is also not an irrigation meter. Yeah.
Oh dear.
So
by theory, we'd be setting precedence with this for what's going on with the schoolhouse.
So can we find out how much it actually would cost the district if we were going to, because it comes out of taxpayer pockets, if we were going to fund the installation part?
So here's my suggestion. We go ahead and take the initial piece, which is the transfer, and potentially have a little bit of discussion about what kind of restriction that should go along with the language of that for a motion. And then the second motion, in terms of waiving the fees, perhaps what we need to do is have additional information before we can pass on that portion. Mm-hmm. Of it, does anyone see any kind of limitation in taking that kind of approach, or does not have a preference for that?
It seems like a good approach. I think, though, what we might do, if we choose to go forward, is the administrative fees, which we know what they are, and we could waive those should we choose to. That's, or not. But the actual cost of installation, we would want to know before we sign any kind of blank check on that, because it is asking for communication. Contributions from the rest of the community who may or may not be supporting green space. But I think that we do, if I read the verbiage here, I think that we may have to either apply some restriction in order to stay within our code. There needs to be either some restriction put on it or some kind of a lot needs to be retired, because if I read this, we may enter in, to transfer existing water commitments, et cetera, et cetera, if it is to either reduce current or future water demand or provide affordable housing or permanently retire lots from development or provide for permanent open space. So I think for us to do this within our current code, we have to meet one of those criteria. The simplest one is simply restrict the amount of water that can go through that meter. So may I make a motion?
Certainly.
I move that we approve the transfer. Someone can fill in the details here. That we approve the transfer, that we waive the administrative fee, the third one, and that we limit the amount of water going through the meter. What did we say that they think they might want to use? to some number that they think is reasonable.
Well, yeah, they said 35 units was the maximum that, that had been used before, and that's what they were looking for, okay, instead of the average, which was 9.
Yeah, I think we have to go with 9, because if we go with the maximum, then we're not reducing the usage, and then we're not in compliance with our code. Mm-hmm. So I think we have to limit it at some, maybe 32 units or something, just to stay within the letter of the law somehow. So I'm screwing up this motion. Shall we try it again? Well, or?
The only other thing I would suggest is the language about waiving the fee would need to be removed, because we have to address that as a separate item.
Okay. So I move that we approve the transfer with a limitation to the usage of water, but maybe we can discuss that limitation as a separate issue. Would that be doable?
I think that we probably should discuss that as part of this motion, because the transfer, it needs to have that kind of language associated with it.
We could do that, too.
We can do that, too.
That's a good idea.
And maybe we just table this till next week so that we can get some more information as to, you know, what the usage is, who owns the current parcel that it's being transferred from. And I'd like to know if that parcel is on the wait list. Mm. I don't think it is. But just to check to make sure that it's not on the wait list would be good. And then if it's not on the wait list, then the chances of it ever getting a meter are slim and none. So let's table this for till next week, and we can get some more information from.
We should probably look into the actual cost of insulation.
We would like that brought back also.
Right, and so, I am curious also about the potential limitation on the property that is removing or relieving the water meter, as to what kind of potential constraints are put on it for future use.
So, Madam Chairman, so I withdraw my motion and instead move that we table this item till next week.
And do I hear a second?
I second.
And roll call, please.
Director Howe?
Aye.
Director Pearson?
Aye.
Director Rice?
Aye.
Vice President Steidel?
Aye. And it passes 4-0.
Vice President Steidel, if I could just, one other question I'd like to know is whether or not we can merge the lot, if it's right next door to his the lot with a house on it. I don't know if that's, I'm seeing a no.
I just looked up. And
okay.
Those parcels are owned, the three that are continuous are owned by three different people.
Okay.
According to county records.
So it can't be merged.
So it's not going to be a merge.
Okay. Thank that kind of information is helpful. Thank you.
So that just confused me. You said the three properties that are contiguous, the one that has the meter on it, by
the house,
right?
An empty lot, the house. The empty lot is where the meter is.
Right, and
all three of them are owned by different people.
Okay, so theoretically, there would never be any water used on that lot that the meter's coming off of, because it's not owned by either property owner on either side.
But it won't be retired for
It wouldn't be retired for our BRP and other programs that we're trying to reduce the number of buildable lots. That's why I asked about retiring it.
I know green space supports the BRP.
Maybe green space could ask Mr. Arnold to give it to them, and they could then
The property?
Transfer it over to us, eh?
I just want to express my thanks for Green Space and Mr. Arnold to trying to make the town a better place, even though he's not still here.
That finishes the regular business, and we would move to future agenda items. So if there are any comments from the community as far as future agenda items, and not seeing any, then I adjourn to closed session, and I open again for public comment, and not seeing any, I move to close.
The closed session is agenda item 8.
No, well, I vote for a small agenda.